Okay, so we are nearing the end of the event, but I sent a note around, and I think it's okay with everybody on the panel for each panelist to take 1 minute for a closing comment. And rather than going all the way from one side to the other, I want to take one person from my left, one person from my right, and alternate through. So you guys can self-organize. And since we heard from you guys last, why don't one of you start? And so we'll take 1 minute each, closing comments. We're actually going to hear from the panel right now. When we're done with that, you can take up some space. But right now, it's these folks' turn. So one of you can go ahead and start.
Okay, so I don't actually think that violent tactics are the most important tool in our toolbox. I think if we're going to get a qualitatively different world, it's going to take all sorts of tactics. It's going to be rent strikes, work strikes, refusal to pay transit fares, occupations, sabotage, radio and TV takeovers, barricades on cities, barricades on highways. And it's going to be in combination with riots, street fights with the police, defending ourselves, defending our occupations, defending the liberated territory that we seize. If there's one thing I want people to get out of this panel, it's for people to know that folks are not acting violently out of cowardice. When people don masks, it's not out of cowardice, it's to protect themselves and their comrades from legal repression. It's to be able to protect the other people in the march who are not wearing masks. When people paint on the walls of the city, it's to communicate in a way that would never be allowed in the dominant discourse of a society or in the media. When barricades are lit on fire, know that the effect of the smoke cancels out the tear gas. In many other countries, the police know to keep their distance from protesters because the entire crowds join in tossing tear gas canisters back to the police lines and throwing rocks.
Someone from the left over here.
So the one thing I really want to drive home is that nonviolence does not only mean not being violent. The curriculum that I've studied, it's a two-week training of 14-hour days just to be certified to present the material, and we don't spend all those hours like learning how to turn the other cheek in 50 million different ways. There's a whole lot more to nonviolence than that, including organizing strategies and the role of direct action, the role of negotiation. But mostly, I believe that love is the most powerful emotion in the world that we have as human beings. And for me, nonviolence is about taking that emotion and being able to put it into a strategy to make social change. So it's about moving forward with the power of love as opposed to the power of fear, the power of violence, the power of intimidation. It's about moving forward with love. So I want to end there. I love you all from the bottom of my heart, and let's continue to keep this together.
I just want to say...
we're alternating sides. Excuse me.
I want to thank everybody for being patient and sticking around and listen to us ramble for this long. A few quick points I want to make. The first thing I want to do is encourage everybody to research these pillars of nonviolence that we're given every day. It's not that some of those aren't valid and don't exist, but I think we take them as myths too often. So please, let's really delve into what's real and not what's myth. The other thing I'll say is, how do we move forward? I think on both sides, I want to issue a challenge. The first is, for people who believe in strictly nonviolence or strategic nonviolence, please stop with the rhetoric that comes from a moralistic attitude that says I'm not courageous, not moral, not loving, or not thinking clearly if I act in a way that disagrees with you. The second challenge, to a lot of people may be clapping, the second challenge is for those who believe in a diversity of tactics, we actually do need to be accountable, we do need to make agreements, and we do need to challenge ourselves on what's actually effective and when. And the last point I'm going to make is that unfortunately, the Occupy movement isn't one movement. It's a lot of people that have been oppressed for decades, that have been feeling the abuses of this system for centuries, and then it's also people who are upset that they don't own their homes and cars anymore and just want to get back to the 90s. And that is a split that we have to address. Otherwise, we're not going to move forward.
I'm going to stand up because I want to look at you again. I want to let you know how wonderful it is to see you and to see all the gray hairs. And I want to say that because a movement to transform our nation into the beloved community has to be transgenerational. We cannot just put it on the young. We gray hairs have to get engaged in it as well. And the strength, it seems to me, of where we go is that we have to stay together. We disagree about things, but we're family members. And family members ought to stay together in the struggle. I've just met you all, and I've met many of you, but I approach you as a family member I never met before. And I know that we're in this thing together, in this nation. And we have to stay together and wrestle with these questions and be committed to producing a beloved community right here, beginning with ourselves.
So as a medic at a protest for the last 5, 6, 7 years, I've been to explicitly nonviolent protests where I've given water to comrades locked down, and I've been to violent as hell protests where I've run into clouds of tear gas to grab fallen comrades, push off people who were trying to kidnap them, and take them back to our side. Both are important. All of you are beings of love. I am a being of love. I think that's clear. We've come to some tacit understandings here, things that we should actually like act upon in the future. My experience from my past as someone who voluntarily suffered 6 months of torture is that now, upon reflection, I volunteer to all of you, you don't have to voluntarily suffer, and you can choose to stand up and stop that suffering from happening. Thank you.
First, thanks for coming. This is a fantastic event for me. I hope you took something home from it. I'd just like to say, relate to people, you know. If it's something like a personal struggle I've had, it's relating. I joined the military, and then I no longer could relate to my friends or family. I lived in a different world, I had a different world perspective, and I couldn't speak to them on the same terms anymore. And then I left the military, back into the world I came, an entirely different person. And now I'm you know, doing everything I'm doing. My worldview has been flipped on its head. But if there's anything I think we can take home is just assume that people's motives are good. You know, people get to their worldview and their perceptions in a lot of different ways, but they do it with good intentions. And I think if we can work with that, that's our common ground.
Thanks again for being here, everybody. Like many of my comrades here tonight, I believe that nonviolent direct action has a place in the current so-called Occupy movement. And I really don't want to stand. I believe that nonviolent direct action has a place in the current so-called Occupy movement. I would offer to the current so-called Occupy Oakland movement to take one step towards nonviolence and reconsider the militaristic language of the word occupy, and perhaps move over to decolonize Oakland. I do believe that we're missing a valuable moment by not utilizing every single tactic available to us at this time. I also, just because I only have 30 seconds, want to remind people and really encourage people that when you start thinking about violence and the first thing that comes to your mind is that fucking Whole Foods or that stupid ATM, I'm sorry for the language, little small children who are watching out there, hi mom. I want you to reconsider and think about the violence of the state. Think about the violence of the police. If you can get so mad about this theoretical violence against a window or against a newspaper stand, but you cannot actually muster enough energy to get that pissed off about the everyday systemic violence that occurs against my people, against your people, then you have no place talking about violence. And that was not an indictment, it's just a very strong statement. Thank you.
I'm really glad that we've had this panel on this discussion tonight, and I hope that we can continue having discussions. Again, we may not all reach agreement, but if we reach a common understanding, the truth is there's nobody here who only wants one tactic. We all want diversity of tactics, and there's nobody here who wants stupid, unstrategic actions. We all want to be strategic. We all prefer nonviolence and peace and love to violence, and we all have a great passion for changing the world, and none of us actually has the one right, true, and only way of how to do it. We have changes that we're faced with making right now that are on a scope I don't think we've ever been faced with before. If we're not going to collapse with climate meltdown, we simply have to change our economy, our technology, our energy systems, our food growing systems, our way of life on a global level, and we have to do it really soon. I don't think there's ever been a movement faced with quite that before or has done that quite that before, and I believe that all of us have the passion for making that change, and as long as we can talk to each other and listen with respect, we'll find our way to do it. So.
So I want to offer appreciation to all of you, to the people who asked questions, people who had questions but didn't get a chance to ask them. Ask them. Find someone and ask them that question and continue the conversation as you move out of this space tonight. And if we could just get one more round of appreciation for these awesome panelists.